Welcome back to the Gather Dispatch. I am joined here today by the Digital Strategy Brain Trust here to break down a 2022 review, trend report, retrospective, autopsy, and a little look forward to what to expect in 2023. We are going to give actionable tools to you today. So get out a notepad, listen closely, and I'll introduce my guests right now. Joining me first, to my left, is Gather's digital strategist, Michael Terwent. Welcome, welcome.
Hello.
Thanks for coming. And then across the table from me, we have a return guest, a managing director at Gather, Christophe Jamais.
Hello.
Thank you for joining me again. And finally, to my right here, Wilton Arellano, digital strategist. To the stars! We have to use that for you because dear listeners might notice that Mimi Sunlongo is not here with us today. Due to a variety of scheduling conflicts, this podcast has bounced all around. But the most important thing to us is that we get it out to you, the dear listeners. So we are here. We are pouring one out for Mimi. She will be back next time and she is dearly missed today. But for now, we have business to attend to. We need to look at the year 2022, a year that has encompassed a pre-new normal stage, a relatively new normal stage, a post-new normal stage. I think I would like to start with the promise of the new normal as it comes to hybrid working environments. We burned a lot of ink coming into this fall, guessing what it would be like and guessing how it would impact work and platforms and the tools that digital marketers are using. Which of our expectations were met and which were dashed on the rocks of reality? Wilton, I will start with you.
Yeah, I've seen a mix. Because marketing is so expensive operationally, I've seen a lot of teams want to be tight in the way that they work together, and therefore some get dogmatic about, we got to be in person, we need whiteboard, we need collaborative, we need to be able to shout across the table when an idea comes through and not just go through Slack. And so it's less of wanting to go backwards, but more of like an urgency of the moment. I thought there would be a full embrace, a full remote hybrid, but then people are worried that they're not being as productive or innovative in their output. And so they're prioritizing more in-person marketing operations than I would have anticipated.
Yeah.
So that's just like a team design thing and an operations
sure.
thing.
And is it too early to tell if their fears were founded or is productivity changing at all because of this?
I believe I saw some research showing that productivity has actually gone down for full return to office functions, right?
So early returns on the productivity bump of back to work, no?
Okay. Yeah. I don't think it's effective. COVID showed us the talent pool for things like digital strategy and marketing is far and wide, and we have to be able to reach those. And you could see that in the proliferation of talent marketplaces. I think those are proof points that you can't just like localize your team if you want to get really good work done. So yeah, I don't think marketing leaders that want productivity out of being in person are going to be very successful at it.
I think it's also a question of being dogmatic for the sake of it isn't effective. Flexibility and optionality matters more than a rigid structure. And I think we found that here with our own office. Mm-hmm. Nobody's required to come in the office. It's here if you need it. It's here if you need to get together and you want the benefit of in-person collaboration, but it's not foisted upon anybody. While there might be fewer people in the office on average because of that, people are getting the most out of what they think they need in the moment. If they want to feel comfortable at home, working in a very fairly isolated manner because their brain or the type of work they're doing requires it, great. If they want to get out of the house, it's here.
Looking into 2023 then, do we think that generally the marketplace is going to learn that lesson or double down on back to work? Or Michael, do you have a sense of where you think that's going?
I really believe in the flexibility approach. That's something that I've benefited from over several years. I've been freelance for a while now, and I feel the pain of my clients when they have to go back to the office. Mm. And there's this sidebar discussion of like, well, why are we even doing this? I would love to see that flexibility piece. I've just benefited so much from it.
Well, I think we're all in accord there. Clearly, we have a consensus recommendation, the extent to which the entire industry will listen to this podcast and agree with us, or at least do what we're asking to do. I don't yet know, but let's move on to other promises of 2022. Let's think about ads. Clearly, it has been rocky sailing. Michael, from your perspective as somebody who I know does a lot of strategy around campaigns who are directly tied to the selling of those spaces, what are you seeing?
Yeah, this is weird. This is something that really baffles me. Somehow, the systems remain buoyant despite a whole lot of skepticism and this like rocky unpacking of events over the last couple of years. Trust is at an all-time low in these platforms. You know, Facebook and, you know, now Meta has gone through this crazy evolution, and people still, like, for some reason, there's some kind of trust. And I think it's more of a complacency than a real trust. And for certain placements and certain applications, there's no other game in town. Like, if you want to hit that kind of target with a certain kind of like segmentation, you're kind of stuck with these systems. And they're so massive that they kind of remain unchallenged.
The big players here remain Facebook.
Yeah, Meta for sure. LinkedIn as well has kind of had a resurgence through the pandemic. And then there's the new entrants. So, you know, the TikToks of the world and certain platforms adding paid placements as well.
So as far as tool set, is Meta still out in front? Has LinkedIn bridged the gap for targeting, for customization?
That's a good question, because I think, yes, in a very specific way. So it was a sad day for myself and a lot of paid specialists when Facebook basically disbanded the audience insights. I know Wilton and I have commiserated on this one. This is like Cambridge Analytica fallout, I think, when it was like, oh, these guys are being pretty evil. Let's check that. But it was a goldmine. So if you're not aware, it was basically a part of the paid suite in Facebook where you could upload an audience or create a custom audience based on your segmentation and then drill down into all kinds of data. And it was incredibly helpful just even to get a feel for what this group is doing or not doing. And so that disappeared. Now, LinkedIn has a similar thing now, which is really good to see.
There's a big bifurcation in what ad spend is going where, and that's B2C or B2B. LinkedIn is so ideal for so many B2B industries because the types of demographic data they have are hyper-relevant, meaning if you're a seller in a certain industry, you know exactly what type of role, position, industry, and combination of those attributes you're trying to target to sell stuff to for consideration. You can literally go and create an ad campaign that targets that specific role and that specific geo and that specific industry, even to a specific company. And that makes it really powerful. More expensive, it's definitely quite a premium you pay, but it's a network with opt-in information that is where the users are incentivized to be accurate about it. For a B2B industry where they know who they're trying to reach, it's so effective. And I think it's quite underutilized, actually.
Mm. And what's the difference? Why are they allowed to do it and Facebook or Meta was no longer allowed to do it?
Lack of evil?
Yeah, and the data is self-reported. So Facebook Audience Insights was built upon aggregation of different third-party data verification tools that then they triangulate, like, this is what we know and this is what we can know. And they had a bunch of data partners in the back end. All the professional data that is self-reported on LinkedIn is maybe reported at a rate of like 10% on Facebook. People like raising their hand, this is my job title, this is a company I work for. But when you go into the audience insights on LinkedIn, it's just like, that's all information I input. You don't need to go to a third party to get that. And that's why Facebook Audience Insights lost a lot of juice after they like disconnected themselves from those third parties, because there was too much technical risk and regulation risk in being too closely tied to the way Cambridge Analytica went down.
I guess the missing members of this conversation around ad placement are Alphabet, Google, and Musk, Twitter.
Yeah.
Where at the end of 2022, do those fit into the puzzle of options for people trying to target their ads into the world?
Yeah, search will always be there. There's always going to be someone typing into Google how to do something, where to find something. along with YouTube, which is the second largest search engine right next to Google Search. What changed is the operations behind it. You'll see certain things within Facebook and within Google Search Max, Conversion Max, or Advantage Plus. And it's basically inputting hundreds of variations of audience and creative. And their machine learning is so advanced now that it would take a human weeks to test all the variations it's able to in days. And so a lot of media buying has been consolidated down to set up, set it, and forget it a little bit. There is no more arbitrage of like, let me create this complex set of variations and then see which bright spot there is in this audience, match with these three messages, when their machine learning can do hundreds of variations at once, find a statistically significant signal. And what that means to marketing leaders and marketing operators and media buyers is your advantage is not in being a better media buyer. Mm-hmm. Your advantage is positioning, creative, and visuals, because the media buying playing field is even. Mm. These yeah. machines are going to do the testing for us.
It's back to basics, you know, back to listening to your audience and getting your messaging right. I think this is probably one of the biggest shifts that we've seen in these tools ever. It's getting closer to the promise of digital, having this perfectly relevant message delivered at the right time to the right person. And it's because of this programmatic aspect and machine learning behind the helm. So I think that's massive. There's one other one with Google specifically, and it's that for the first time ever, we have seen the younger demographic, their usage of Google search is dropping. Mm-hmm. And it's because they are using other platforms like Instagram and TikTok to get their search results. And mm-hmm. that's like the most routine searches, like, where do I get lunch right now? How do I find this product? Like, you just go through the brand itself on those platforms.
Yeah, there is a report. I think it might have been self-published by Google that searches are moving to TikTok. There is a conspiratorial angle where they are incentivized to say there is diversity in search sources so that they don't have to be broken up.
Yeah.
But in terms of a generational shift, I've seen more B2C brands say they're getting returns on older demographics through TikTok advertising. And so the assumption that that's just a Gen Z platform mm-hmm. is just not true anymore. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense. That's where the buying power is. And TikTok content has been redistributed through YouTube Shorts and Facebook videos. And so people have exposure to it on other platforms that are older. So they'll naturally start to go to the source. So TikTok is an option, not just for like cool Gen Z brands, but like older buyers.
Yeah. And I think there's, when you look at TikTok, there is a very big difference in who's making the content and who's consuming the content. The people binging and consuming the content will skew quite a bit older than the people creating the content. The type of stuff they're searching for is specific and native to TikTok, meaning people are looking for how-tos, people are looking for perspective. I think you see a lot of product review. And I think it's also shifting a lot of spend to influencers in a TikTok specific way.
Yeah, there's a ton of young influencers and creators that are making serious money in those platforms now.
One thing that I think has been a negative in terms of how TikTok's algorithms work is it definitely impedes variety of content for specific people. So if you're a specific creator on TikTok and you've gotten that little viral boost and you've hit that wave, I'd say 80% of all those people that have found some notoriety on TikTok end up being one tricks because they're like, this sort of thing I did was successful. And they end up doing that every single time. They have like four dozen videos of the same premise. It's like boring. And it's, you know, so I think algorithms kind of pigeonhole people into chasing what got them success in the first place. And it actually creates a bit of degradation of content quality in some way.
Fair. I would have trouble knowing how much of that blame to apportion to the algorithm and how much to the human appetite for the same
shit.
That's
fair.
It's the algorithms in our brain, man.
Yeah, the worst ones of all. So the one we have not talked about, and are we avoiding it for a good reason, is Twitter. Mm. What happens to these dear, dear brands trying to advertise in Twitter for the rest of 22? Where do they find themselves right now?
Realistically, wait and see. the big worry is content moderation policies. Like, what direction is that going to go? And what does Elon Musk mean when he says Twitter should be a platform for all kinds of speech in the public square, and he wants to maintain that? And I don't know what the vision is in his head. Yeah. And so neither do advertisers, and they're worried.
What do we think needs to happen for Twitter to no longer be a stay away?
If we go to the revenue side first, there's essentially a Maslow-style hierarchy of needs that advertisers need to feel comfortable on a platform. One is, it's not a giant liability dumpster fire. And when you remove the entire part of Twitter that moderates or regulates people saying things that advertisers don't want to go near with a 10-foot pole, they're going to pause or just put their spend somewhere else. And I think there's a lot of paid media specialists that are going to be A-okay with one fewer platform to advertise on. On the other side, the environment needs to be enjoyable for people to spend time on it. And I think there was some metrics of like counting the number of N-words that showed up on Twitter the minute Elon Musk bought Twitter, and it's like skyrocketed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's turning into a place that's very alienating.
And not famously a fun place before that.
No, it was a salt factory before.
Yeah.
And now it's like married 4chan or something, right? Like.
And so to that point, big business, what percentage of the spend is on 4chan? What do we expect for 23?
Oh my God.
Is Anon IB finally getting that market share?
Well, sorry, I was going to say, I do think that there is, I think that maybe one question we want to ask ourselves is, where should the money go?
Yes.
What platforms exist that haven't really been in the general parlance these days that are getting more attention? I think Reddit has steadily existed and has had some sort of revenue stream.
And they have taken some of that search traffic off of Google's plate.
Because I do Reddit searches on Google, number one, because Reddit search is awful.
Yeah.
But number two, because it's real people offering real perspective and there's peer vetting in the upvotes or downvotes and awards. Yeah. So I think Reddit is actually a really powerful reference perspective platform that advertisers use. They also use it for AMAs to gain transparency and brand trust, which is important. I also think that more localized, closed-off community platforms are going to become much more important. And I'm talking about Discord. I know. Yeah. I've been a big Discord fanboy for a very long time, but the truth is that people trust their own people the most. And Discord really, I think, gained a lot of utility during the pandemic because it let friends connect and stay connected when they couldn't see each other. Any sort of insertion into that sort of platform, even if you can't do it in a throw money at the problem sort of way, if you can drive regular people to talk about your product or service in an authentic way, that's where we're going. It's like very much back to the roots of original influencer marketing. Mm. Not some rich person with a nice face and an Instagram account, but a real person you know and trust who has some eminence in a space saying, I've tried this, it's really good.
Mm-hmm. You can't throw money at that. Reddit is notoriously tricky to advertise on, but I use it all the time for insights and validation, just to get my finger on the pulse of what some specific niche is doing. Like, it is rock solid for that.
It is interesting that this is the first platform that's come up where we've talked about the positive value of the content and not just the marketer tools.
Mm.
Probably has something going for it.
Yeah. On the Reddit front, there are places to put your ads that you could call like emerging channels. The established channels, it's getting more expensive to buy traffic. So I just pulled up some basic stats. 2021, 108% increase in CPM, so that's cost per thousand. So that's how much it costs someone to have your ad viewed 1,000 times. Went up by 108%. YouTube CPM in 2021, also 108%. Facebook CPM in 2021, 89% increase. LinkedIn CPM in 2021 in Q4, 30% increase. It's getting more expensive because just of the natural dynamics of an auction, the more advertisers that are on these mainstream channels, just the more expensive all of the traffic gets overall. So being willing to go into emerging channels is going to be a requirement if you want to diversify your portfolio, and your ad budget is not going to go up because I doubt anyone is going to increase their ad spend right now. It's an efficiency and profitability game. When you look at like public markets, venture investors, no one's talking about grow at all costs at all anymore.
You know, what was once a perennially emerging platform was Snapchat.
Yeah.
To what extent did it ever emerge, and where is it on the menu of options now?
Snapchat's interesting. Their recent earnings report showed that their revenue went down, which means less advertisers are on it, but their users went up. Mm-hmm. And so even when you compare that storyline to Meta, overall, their user base is going down. And so if you think of like the perpetuity of a channel, you have to kind of put that macro context and think, all right, so what's the next Meta if they're not able to increase, if my total addressable market is just decreasingly going to not be on Meta, where will they be? So Snapchat should be on like the far radar, but I would say it's still, it doesn't quite compare performance-wise yet. Okay. But the users will be there and they're continuing to use it. So by volume compared to Meta decreasing, it should still be in your mind.
Would you say it's got a fairly narrow generational population?
Yeah, probably more narrow than TikTok. The expansiveness and cross-generationality of TikTok, it's hard to quantify.
And Snapchat diverted a bunch of resources to hardware development. That makes me think they're focusing more on content creators as opposed to promoting themselves as an ad platform. Mm. So can we talk about organic for a second?
I'll let you.
Thank you, sir. I mean, you know, we're talking a lot about paid, right? And like, where should we put the money? And I've got a stat here. This is from Buffer, a social platform. 88% of brands don't respond to messages that need a reply. And that speaks to a problem where it's a lot of like outbound. I'm going to just push my message out there on the world. Am I going to bother to listen for the reply? Mm. Nah, it's just like launching it out there into the void.
This might be an opportune moment to pivot sort of into tools, because one way to address that imbalance of shouting versus listening at big brands is chatbots, artificial intelligence. There have been a lot of advancements in the tools used in marketing over the past year, especially creative tools, some around design, some around chatbot implementation. What has been one of the more interesting trends you've seen there? Wilton, we'll start with you.
I mean, the big headline of this year is generative AI.
Okay.
In a time where venture fund capitalization is 20-30% what it was, Jasper.ai down in Texas, which is a content creation AI built on top of something called GPT-3, where they have the promise of automatic copywriting at scale for blogs, social media posts, SEO, all done with one of the smartest machine learning infrastructures in the market right now. And they raised a gigantic Series B. And Stable Diffusion just got a huge round as well. So all that fits into a trend of there are less gatekeepers when it comes to creative output. You don't necessarily need to wait for a writer. You still need one, because these generative tools are still kind of goofy in some sense when if you have the wrong input. You still need someone with a good editorial mind to even input a good thing to have a good output. So it's a little bit garbage in, garbage out. But being able to, for example, update all my stock photo imagery automatically across all my blogs for less than $45 in generative credits, which increases the on-site performance of my content overall, which increases my friendliness to Google that loves like their whole usefulness algorithm now. So just those types of creative advantages are being unlocked right now. There are less and less barriers to being creative, just like there is less and less barriers to media buying. And so to be able to stand out, the standards have gone way up. And that is going to increase the value of like really good market research and really good ideal customer profile work. And so with all this parity across just the labor of good digital strategy, now you just need relevance. because everyone has the same design standards. Everyone's going to be able to media buy. Now that we could all do it, you have to be talking to the right people in the right way, in the most unique way. And so I think product marketing is going to have a boost in their contribution to performance, especially lowering the cost. That's some of what I'm looking at.
Michael, what are you seeing from your seat?
Yeah, that's something that's, you know, jumping out of me there. And it's this back to basics piece, you know, like there's so many tools, you know, and so much enablement, but there's with that comes a lot of noise. And it's really hard to see the forest from the trees. There's something that we advocate for specifically in growth strategy. And it's about really focusing on all your efforts. So you if you want to be serious about it, you might want to focus on one acquisition channel. You want to have one North Star metric and a set of objectives that necessarily ladder up to that. And then all your ideas, any kind of like marketing initiatives, you scrutinize heavily, and they must also necessarily ladder up to your objectives, and keeps everything super, super on rails. I'm just weary of, like, there's a couple of buzzwords out there that are like, okay, personalization. Like, I think that's a great idea. Like, I want to see that, but let's just be careful, because if it means going down the rabbit hole and you don't get any uplift after a whole lot of digging, that's not going to be helpful. It has to fit. It has to be worthwhile. You have to have a rock solid hypothesis around that before even pursuing.
What is the footfall to watch out for there? Is just hyper-personalization for a hypothetical person who ends up not caring?
Sure. The other one is omni-channel. You know, like people, big brands especially, really want to have this omni-channel presence. Like, we're everywhere. Like, it starts to feel a bit Minority Report, honestly. But, like, I think if you really zero in on where your customer is at and, like, what their pain points are, it should be pretty self-evident as to where you can meet them. And then at that place and time, you have a real discussion about, okay, well, yeah, we can actually solve this for you.
Sure. It does seem like we're coming off the better part of the last decade with the pressure on marketers being that you need to adapt to the new platforms on time, and you need to be everywhere, and the presence needs to be felt across everything from your .com to Pinterest. If it exists, you need to be there.
Yep.
Is one of the things we're looking at for this decade, just stop. It's not worth it. It's not worth being in a dumpster fire just because you need to have relevance in Twitter.
I think users are also getting very desensitized to it. Like, I think all of us here are very good at swiping through what we know is an ad before the video even plays, right? People are absolutely over-advertised to. They're over-targeted. If I see one more ad of something I bought 2 days ago, that's what they think personalization is. There's no really throughput to the entire customer experience. And I think that that's the other part of it, right? When you say back to basics, it's not just back to basics on the marketing front. It's back to basics on the sales experience, the delivery, the customer service. That's where chatbots are really important, right? You can have a good chatbot implementation versus a bad one is a world apart in terms of frustration, right? Like, a good chatbot should be able to get you self-service information really quickly, act as a triage, but then route you to somebody as soon as you're not getting what you need from the chatbot. And I think so many times they've just become the new automated phone line. I think the whole life cycle matters.
Yeah.
All right, CJ is making a gesticulation, which means he has a meeting to go to, so.
That's true, I am gesticulating.
Thanks for stopping by again.
Thanks for having
me. Good luck at your meeting.
Thanks, guys.
We'll see you soon. All right, Wilton, I know you were nodding furiously at some of these statements.
Yeah.
It seems like you have things to say.
Yeah, personalization is huge, and it used to require custom engineering, data science to connect all these tools, but there will be more personalization accessible if you just create the right accounts with the right tools that have it out of the box. I would recommend looking at Mutiny as a key example. They are a personalization tool that ties in with other identity verification tools like Clearbit and Sixth Sense, where if someone is visiting your website, those tools show you, oh, this is the company address of the IPs that they came from, the titles, these are the people that exist in your CRM. And previously, someone in digital strategy would have to do a lot of digging to say, who do I address in what industry? Is there a big enough audience size to make like a meaningful change in what they're seeing on my website? And then do I have the engineering bandwidth to run an A/B test without breaking the website. So all those worries are becoming less and less. And a lot of the data analysis is becoming more, not automated, but just more accessible. Where if you go into a tool like Mutiny and it shows you 1,000 healthcare industry employees have visited your website and they're converting lower on average, and you have an opportunity to target these people with a specialized healthcare message. To get that insight would have required a high amount of coordination with the data analyst and then coordinating with the engineer to run the A/B test. But with that, it's just one integration, a look at one of their tool screens, and then you could spin out a personalization experience. And that would have taken, that will take someone less than an hour, less than 2 hours. And so personalization is definitely possible, more possible at scale, and will become more accessible in 2023. So definitely have that in your toolbox going forward.
Yeah, 100%. I look forward to the actual realization of the promise of digital, and we're getting there. The onus is on marketers and heads of marketing to just be mindful of where they put their spend and not succumb to the shiny object syndrome.
That leads me to a recurring segment that we call Medium Rare Takes. And it is where I deliver a take not quite hot enough to be a hot take and not quite baked enough to be fully baked. So it's a medium rare take. And my medium rare take for this conversation, given the amount of tools available to marketers in general, are we finally able, after the digital explosion of God knows when in the aughts, just to go back to doing our jobs of trying to like make good things, talk about them well, and create nice content around them? Can we just get back to that? Are we there?
Yes.
All right. See you next week.
Yeah. Be happy. I think there has been a joke with like technical marketers, and that was like a pretentious way of categorizing yourself as someone that knew how a pixel worked like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
There was a saying like, oh, it used to be madmen, now it's mathmen. But now it's just like, no, everyone has access to the same data, to the same like outputs of automated content with cheaper labor cost on high quality creative. And now you could just be a good editor. You could be a great writer. You could talk about visuals and even produce variations on great visuals at scale. If you are a brand marketer, a product marketer, a copywriter, these are the golden years coming up, because your ability to have empathy for your audience, do solid market research, and your creative is just going to be distributed like crazy. And so, yeah, now's the time.
Fantastic.
That
Michael,
is,
are you going to burst my balloon or are you with me?
No, I'm with you. I'm with
All
you.
Right.
I think that is at least slow cooked take. Slow cooked to perfection. Yeah, I think we're there. And I think Wilden's got the hot take on top of it. You know, that we will go back to actually just telling the story, right? It goes back to like, for me, it's inbound. You know, it's more of like pull, less push. Going back to what we're talking about, how we are all kind of like smothered by the noise of like over-advertising. The modern day consumer is way, way savvy. Like, we all have these supercomputers in our pockets. We can all pull up reviews and all sorts of stuff. The buying process is, there's more complexity there. There's more noise, but it's quicker than ever. So it's this kind of double-edged sword piece, right?
And I think because people are over-advertised to, your ability to tell a good story, be authentically present, is now worth its weight in gold. It matches the way people buy. I mean, there's a sales stat that only 2% of people actually convert on a sale on a first interaction. And there's another 98% there where they went to a review page, they talked to someone on a Slack channel, which some people have called dark social, which just means it's like untrackable.
Right.
Then they watched a video of you and maybe they message your customer success team at some point, but they remember you. And so now like content creation, and interestingly, in the B2B world, there is a whole movement to treat your marketing department like a media company. Like, that's a whole mindset shift that a lot of B2B marketing leaders are emphasizing. And so now there are whole operations to like, hey, record a 1-hour long video and then just have operations that could turn that into micro content.
Content dissemination.
Yeah. And that's the focus. Like, be everywhere, but authentically.
Listen, you can go back to Gather pitch decks from 2014 with my name on them, delivering that exact same idea. Treating your marketing org like a media company. So, scorching hot take at the time.
Maybe the biggest silver lining out of the last couple of years is that we are going back to community and some basic human interaction. The whole playing field just got shaken up. Especially in the US, we had the pandemic that was global, but then there was some very specific social stuff that's happened in the last couple of years, and it's really changed the landscape, right? So it's going back to that authentic place of people just want to be seen. People just want to be heard. Like, that's just human basics. So if a brand can actually display that, and I don't mean like the perception of, I mean they actually show up, that's worth a lot.
Mm-hmm. You see it in the move away from just retarget, because now we're moving to a cookie-less world where people are less and less trackable across their devices. And so you just have to be there and just ask them the question, where'd you hear about us? and they're likely going to tell you something that your MarTech stack is not going to tell you. Because really, it will say is they clicked on a Google ad.
Sure.
But really, they're going to tell you, oh yeah, I saw your panel interview.
Yeah. And imagine treating that interaction like an actual customer interaction and not a data intake form.
Yes.
Just imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. People.
Yeah, real imagine people. That. All right. Well, there's one more thing I would like for us to imagine before we release our good listeners back into the wilds of digital marketing. Imagine we sit back down and do this, which we probably should, at the end of 2023.
Yeah.
What is one thing you think we will be talking about that we have not talked about today?
Well, it'll be good to see what Elon's done. I mean,
that'll be something to see it.
Maybe by that time. And I didn't want to open this box, but Web3, blockchain.
Big box.
NFT.
We'll tease it for next year.
So maybe those will have matured in a way where, some people are calling it Web 2.5. They're like more accessible points with interacting with these types of things.
Yeah.
And if you looked at some of the NFT campaigns that some of these luxury brands ran during New York Fashion Week, for example, where if you purchase an NFT, you get exclusive access to an event. If you earn an NFT in like a blockchain mobile game, you get access to functionality and earn certain statuses in some mobile games. So it's early exploration. And what will we be probably talking about in that space is the rise of community management as like a more and more respected marketing function, because those types of areas are all about people and communities, like spread throughout Discord, Reddit, all these like private communities. Anyone in the customer evangelist game, dev evangelists, community managers, they are just going to become more and more valuable as time goes on and these things mature.
There was something related that we were kind of dancing around when we were talking about Reddit, and it's this idea of vertical social networks. So if the classic social networks, Instagram and those guys are all horizontal, vertical would just be like hyper niche. So the funny rule of thumb that I read was that if there's a subreddit that exists for it, there's a vertical social platform that exists for it. And it's the same idea of like really focusing in on like your VIPs, like who are the people that are really, really like out there almost doing the sales job for you? How can you make the experience more special, for them? I've seen a new company called Charm.inc actually, and they're doing this like tokenization aspect, right? And applying it in a much more realistic way. Like the New York Fashion Week example is on point, where you have something that is trying to capture the value of that moment, which I think we all kind of like intrinsically want to do, but this is just putting like some kind of tokenization on it, like a digitization without the wallet, without the tech, without having to be a blockchain nerd. Mm. So I think that's the flavor of what we've been talking about, where these systems are becoming simplified and more accessible for lay people. You don't have to be the tech nerd.
Well, I would like to focus on my VIPs. Mm-hmm. And thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Wilton, Michael, that was fantastic. We will do this again, hopefully before the end of next year, but at the very least at the end of next year, and we'll let you know what happened. And we will stick to our recommendations here and pay the price if we were wrong.
Yes, absolutely.
But thank you, dear listeners, for joining us for another Gathered Dispatch. We will be with you in a bit. And now it is time for me to ask of you the one and only thing that I ask of you. If you liked this, if you found it edifying, think of one person who might feel the same and suggest they give it a listen. Thank you. See you all soon.